This is Rod Davis, area manager in Las Vegas with JerryPippin.com, and I'm presently with Dave Considine in Brantford, Connecticut. Dave is known as an LRD, which is a lay religious demonologist. Dave, tell us what a lay religious demonologist is.
Well, basically, what a lay religious demonologist is someone who studies the occult, one who studies all facets of preventions, and this person would intercede, like myself, would intercede where we have a spiritual being, or more so a negative spiritual type being, and we will intercede to try to help that person if they've gotten themselves involved with the occult, or they've bought a house that may have some type of problem. We will help them through religious means, or through trying to build the person up emotionally, whereas at that point in time they're really kind of depressed, because they have this in their house or they have this in their lives. Try to get them to a point where they're positive, that they're trying to, try to get them to a point where they have a good outlook, and if they do have any type of religion, we try to work through that religion to alleviate the problem. But that's basically it.
Do you find that these people are dwelling on the fact that they have something unusual going in their house, and because of that fact, it's getting worse, more so mentally than it actually is?
Well, I think there are occasions where someone can give recognition. Now, if we have a negative type spirit or a demonic type presence in a home, one can give recognition to this presence, and it can gain a stronghold in the person's life, and it can intercede directly on a person, or it can intercede on a family and destroy that family structure. It's the basic goal to destroy that family or that person.
And why do you suppose that's the goal?
Well, since the beginning of time, these things, these demonic creatures, which we call fallen angels, they have pulled themselves away from God. They are the opposite of God, where God wants to help us in our day-to-day lives. And these creatures basically want to destroy. They want to see man fall, because man is the greatest creation of God.
Do you think that it's possible that if a person is weak, that will allow an opening for this type of a spirit to come into their life?
Well, yes, especially if a person is involved with some type of occultic practices, or they live in a house, like we had said before, if they have any type of mental problems, whereas they are maybe schizophrenic or they have some sort of mental disease, this could aid the spirit to intercede in the person's life, even in an emotional state when the person's weakened. If you want to look at it this way, a metaphysical way, your aura is it's not a protection so much, but a light around you. They try to intercede, they try to find that fissure, that crack, to intercede in your life. So if you're not protected, that's why when we go into a home, we put ourselves into what we call a Christ light. We will envision a white light around us, and we will call on the name of Jesus, but you don't have to be a religious person to do this. Like I said before, we can also call it a white light. You can envision yourself surrounded by this white light, and you will be protected, but you just have to believe in yourself, and you have to believe in that protection.
What is your learned opinion about how possession actually occurs?
Well, there's actually three stages of possession. There's obsession, oppression, and possession. These different stages, the only way I can explain it to you is that the person will, through some means, get in contact with the spirit, or the spirit will be in contact with the person. Like you had mentioned before, this person may have an emotional problem, they live in a particular home, or maybe they are involved in some type of practices where this spirit can intercede in their lives. Now, the three stages, when that first initial contact is made, this person begins to become obsessed, whereas they keep on trying to make this contact, and it may appear to them, now if we're talking about a negative spirit or a demonic spirit, it will try to appear as something of a human nature, where it's trying to attract this person to go further, to try to make that contact, and the person becomes curious about it. Now, if we use this example, that would be obsession. Now, oppression would be when the spirit is coming upon this person and influencing that person, whereas it's causing this person to become angry. It's creating a situation where the person may be violent towards their family. They may not be able to sleep, so this lack of sleep is driving this person crazy. It's lowering this person's ability to protect themselves on a physical level and also on a spiritual level. The last stage is possession. This actually goes into griefs when we come to the last stage. And possession is when the spirit has come upon the person. Now, I have to digress for a second. When someone is under possession, their free will is not compromised. But this spirit can come upon the person, whereas they can create a situation where the person just doesn't care anymore. The person has given up so much because they feel that there's no hope for them. And that lack of hope is what the demonic or that evil influence wants to impose upon the person and wants that person to just give up and give themselves up so they maybe commit suicide or just maybe do something horrible like we have in the Amityville case or one of these cases where they may do something that's tragic to either a family member or themselves.
In your investigations, do you ever use any type of equipment or designed any type of special equipment when you're on location or before going on location?
Well, yes, we use your basic equipment. We use cameras, audio recorders, but we also use specially built equipment, whereas we have infrared cameras and different design pieces of equipment, which I think someone that is sitting here with us right now would probably be more learned to explain these different types of equipment. So I'll let him explain. It's Mr. John Arell, my technical director.
John, take over.
Thank you very much. Well, a lot of the equipment that we use, being that I'm in the security industry, so I do have access to a lot of equipment that normally isn't available otherwise. Some of the equipment that we use also is one of the pieces that we use is to detect the warping of the Earth's magnetic field. So that when an entity begins to enter a home, we kind of get a heads up that, okay, there's something coming in. Let's be on our guard. Let's watch our tapes carefully to see what's coming in. We had a case back a couple of months ago here in Connecticut that we had what was called a line analyzer. And one of our other investigators was up in a room by herself, and she would be saying, yes, I can feel something happening. And we'd be watching on this line analyzer. And sure enough, as soon as she said that, the line analyzer would give us all sort of different patterns. It'd last for about maybe 5-10 minutes, and then it would actually go away, have a straight line. And 10 minutes later, almost like clockwork, yes, something's happening. Here we go again. We get the images on the screen. So that helps us right along there with that. We also have another piece of equipment that's called BDI that basically stays in a room and it watches the background just for any background disturbances that might be coming into the room. It's just somebody or even a cat, let's say. So we have a pretty good idea that, well, no, this isn't an entity. It's a cat or something, you know, of that nature. It's not a not a spiritual or psychic entity that's trying to enter the home.
The equipment that you use, I thought that I'd read something where you might design something specific for a specific type of an investigation. Can you tell me about that and how you determine what you're going to do?
Well, a lot of it is based on previous experience. Case in point, I designed for our group what's called a big ear, which is a very sensitive microphone. This particular type of piece of equipment isn't available to the general public. Again, it's used in security work, so naturally it has to be a very high quality, very, very sensitive. And we did get quite a bit of interesting recordings with this device, Big Ear as we call it. We also have another device for doing an investigation, let's say for outside of a home. One of the cameras we use has the imaging device that was used when the TV network showed Gulf War I with the laser-guided bombs or with the smart bombs. Well, that imaging device is the same thing that's used in this camera. It's made by a well-known electronics company, but again, it's also used very much in security surveillance work. So some of this is not, you know, readily available right off the shelf, so to speak.
So obviously you have to know what you're doing. Dave, when you're investigating a case, could the entity that you're investigating possibly decide to jump ship and come after you or your team members?
Oh, yes. It has happened. I have been involved with the case. As a matter of fact, I was involved with the case 6 or 7 years ago, where we were up for quite a long time. And I wanted to reacclimate myself in my sleep pattern. So I had stayed up most of the day. When we had gotten back early that morning, I stayed up for most of the day. I think it was around 8 o'clock, 8:30. I had gone to sleep, and I was laying down for not more than a minute. And I was overtired, so I know I wasn't asleep. It's like laying there. I felt my body go paralyzed. Then I feel this presence come upon me, jumping on my chest. The only way I can describe it is an orangutan beating my chest with both fists and jumping up and down the top of me. What happened was it actually pushed me through myself, that I saw the outline of my body. So I was actually having an out-of-body experience in reverse. It was pushing me through myself. The only thing I could do, because I was quite terrified, was call on St. Michael the Archangel in my mind. I couldn't even move my mouth or my eyes or anything. So I called on St. Michael the Archangel. Instantaneously, this was brought off of me. And I spent the rest of that night staying up. So I didn't sleep for quite a few days there. I stayed up for most of that night until the sun rose. But it was quite terrifying.
Dave, do demonic spirits possess just people, or can they possess any object?
Well, a demonic spirit cannot possess an object. It can only infest an object. It can't possess a person. And basically what we have in that instance is that if we go into a house, we'll bring in a person to discern the house. We'll try to find out if there is an object in that particular home that is infested. Maybe it was something that was acquired at a tax sale. Maybe it was a gift. It could be a cursed item also. So we ask the person, have you received any gifts from co-workers, from any one of your friends? Do you have any enemies that maybe have sent you something that just out of the blue and you didn't know why? So yes, items can be infested, cannot be possessed. Only people can be possessed. That is correct.
So when you say infested, I'm trying to picture that. If this would be like maybe a tire that is decaying and it's got some type of negative energy on it that's making it decay. I'm trying to get a grasp on what you mean by infest.
Well, an item that's infested would be something where, like, the good example actually would be an item that's cursed. Through certain types of rituals, either voodoo or maybe Santeria or maybe the black arts in general, the European black arts, or Western black arts, I should say, this item is instilled with this power, this negative type energy. This energy will leech off. If this person owns this item, they're in possession, you know, quote unquote, in possession, they can take upon themselves what is attached to this item. So it's more so that there's an attachment to the item, not so much that it's infested. It is a good word because it means that the almost like a how your house could be infested by mice or anything of that nature. This is infested by a negative type energy. A negative spirit is put upon this object for whatever reason.
Have you ever heard of a demonic spirit possessing more than one person at one time?
Oh yes, especially when you have a case where the family's involved. You could have one particular spirit that will go from person to person. We've had cases where there have been 5 to 6 people in a family that have come under possession, where they will lash out at each other. It was a good example, I believe it was Unsolved Mysteries, where they did a reenactment, and it showed this very dark form, and the wife was actually standing at the kitchen sink, washing dishes, and the husband was sitting down at the table. And like I said, it's a very good example, and it showed the dark form coming towards the wife, and as she's cleaning this particular knife, she starts to become very angry, and she wants to do something that she normally would not do, which is strike out at her husband. And what started out as just a conversation turned into an argument. Then the entity had moved, in this dramatization, moved towards the husband, started him to argue with the wife. Like I said before, it's the breakup of the family. It wants to cause either a tragedy in the family or to cause some type of harm to the person, to break down the human being, no matter if it's 5 people, 10 people, or 1 person.
Okay, when I asked that, I was asking it in the context that it could actually be possessing more than one person at the same time, but what you're saying is that it'll flip from one person to another.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. What typically happens during Jerry, forget orgasm. Let's go to exorcism. What typically happens during an exorcism?
So when we're done with our interviews with the person, and we're pretty sure, either through medical records and psychological evaluations, that we have our own psychiatrists and our own counselors and our own people go over, and we're sure it could be that the person does have a spiritual problem and they do need exorcism, we'll have the person meet us at a certain location. It'll be a particular church, and we will go to the bishop and inquire who he feels would be best fit for this exorcism. And we have quite a few exorcists that we work with, a couple in particular, but we do have other exorcists. Now, at this particular point, the person would be told that all types of things could happen, but to just relax, just to trust us, we've been with them the whole time. We'll sit them down in a chair, a nice sturdy chair, because we've had chairs break, so we try to get the heaviest chair we can. And we will strap the person down. I'm not talking about duct taping a person to a chair. These are strapped. They're very comfortable. It's just so the person won't lash out at the priest. And that's also why we're there. We will try to, if the person does get out of the restraints, we'll try to hold the person down and re-restrain them again, because all types of things can happen. Now, the priest will have a particular table where he'll put his items down, which will be holy relics, holy water, things that he'll use, his service book, which is the Ritual Romanum, and he will start with the Litany of the Saints. So he goes through the Litany of the Saints, he will go directly into the exorcism. The exorcism takes about an hour and a half. Now, during the adjuration of the spirit, which is the asking the spirit, now there's three specific questions that the priest will ask. When did you come into this person? What is your name? And when is the time of your leaving? Those are three specific questions. We are not to talk to the person at all. And the priest is not to question the person directly, only the demon. And it's only to direct the question in the command of Jesus Christ, whereas he is commanding it in the name of Jesus Christ to reveal its identity, when it came into the person and when it's going out. And he may even ask, by what means have you been put upon this person? Meaning that the person may have been cursed, because you can't have a possession through a curse. Now, through the exorcism, the person may react to certain parts of the exorcism. Now, in these different parts of the exorcism, there's three small... The ritual exorcism actually has three different exorcisms in it, okay? Including a lot of psalms, a lot of prayers. But barring going into all of that, during these different parts, if a person reacts, not the person, but I should say that when the demon reacts to a certain part, the priest, the exorcist, will repeat that again. And you will keep repeating that part. And I will play some audio excerpts for you so you can hear what I'm talking about, where he will repeat a certain part in the ritual itself, where it irritates that demon, where it does not want to be in that person or influence that person anymore. And this person will finally be relieved from this demonic presence. A person may have to go through one, two, maybe three, sometimes more exorcisms, but usually one will take care of the situation, usually. But sometimes it does take more.
What is the typical reaction that a person may have during the exorcism?
There is a lot of vulgarity, a lot of screaming. Sometimes we will have the semantic lines, which would be the difference in the body from what is normal, where you have the contortions of the face, where you may have a blackening of the teeth, where you may have a bluing of the gums, but the lips. The eyes may implode in the head. The person will become extremely strong. Now, like I said before, we will play some audio excerpts for you so you're able to hear what this sounds like, but there are different changes that the person will go through. Now, that person is still there, but they're kind of pushed outside. Not outside of their body, but pushed aside, I should say. And this demonic presence actually takes over. It's able to work. Yes, pushed aside. And thank you for correcting. I meant that the spiritual, which would be the soul, if you were a religious person, you would personify it as the soul, is actually pushed aside. That person is still there, but this demonic entity is able to bring upon this person these horrible effects, where the person will lash out, like I said, vulgarity, screaming, different types of guttural noises will come out of the person. animal noises will come out of the person, different things like that, frothing at the mouth.
Do you always use religious churches or people of, in the faith, of ministers, priests, when you do an exorcism, or do you do it without them?
Well, I myself have the ability to exorcise homes. I have this ability because I've been given the authority, Episcopal authority, through Bishop Robert McKenna, working with him for so many years. I cannot perform an exorcism on a person, but on homes. Now, that's the only time that we don't use a priest or someone of the cloth to do exorcisms. We try to, anytime that we use exorcism for a person, we do try to use our own religion. You might say we try to use Christianity. You know, we won't go to a shaman or something like that. Not that they don't, that it doesn't work. I'm not saying that. I can't say that because I don't know enough about that. But the thing is that we try to use things that we're familiar with, things that we know that work.
Among the demonically possessed people that you've met, have you found any common denominators that could be responsible for attracting these spirits?
Curiosity. You know, it goes along the lines of the curiosity killed the cat. Usually you have a person who may have been involved with things in their lives. Sometimes we have people who may have been involved with the Ouija board, and through talking to this person through an interview, they may say, well, I've never been involved in anything of the occult. Really? Well, maybe as a child? Well, we used a Ouija board. You know, something happened, and maybe the planchette flew off the Ouija board, but that was 30 years ago. How could that be affecting me now? Well, it has all the time in the world. It just waits for that particular time. And what really is relevant with each person, what is the similarity, is that that person, it'll be a time in their life where they're at their worst, where they're at their most depressed. Maybe they just lost their job. Maybe they're living a life of debauchery, and they finally have made the decision to become a religious person, whereas not a Catholic or anything like that per se, but just becoming a more religious person, trying to become more closer to God. This demonic presence, if it is around you for whatever reason, doesn't want you to do that. It's going to intercede to try to, it's not going to make its presence known right away, but it's going to cause these different, like you're going down a straight path, it's going to cause these diversions, these detours, whereas you're not going to reach your goal. And that's a good sign. If you do feel as though that you're being detoured and things are just going awry and it doesn't seem natural what's occurring, you may just want to just have your eyes and your ears open and just to be absolutely sure there's not something else there trying to intercede in your life.
The When there's an object that is infested or a demonic spirit has attached itself to it, there's people that could have that object and have no effect, and then all of a sudden there's somebody else that could have that object and have serious effects. Why is that?
Like I said before, it's that particular person. This person may be prone to this, and there are reasons that we don't even know. There are times when we have a person who, like I said before, this person may be depressed in that particular part of their life where they may pick up, it just works out that way, when they may pick up this item or either bought it at a tax sale or maybe they bought a particular home that had something in it. It just depends on that person. Why it occurs to some people and not to others, that still is a mystery, because there are some times where we don't even have the answer when we're involved in a particular case. So we have to absolutely make sure, like I said, that there is this intervention of this creature before we go further. But even when we go further, sometimes we don't even really know why that contact was made. It's, like I said, sometimes it does remain a mystery.
You mentioned before that you have the authority to exercise houses, but you don't have the authority to exercise an individual. Why do you have to have authority from anybody?
Well, the only way I can describe this to you is that in Catholicism, okay, this is in Catholicism now, when we have a bishop is designated to a certain place. He is the personification of Jesus on earth. Okay, he is the authority. He is the verbal authority. He is the spiritual authority. Now, in my belief system, okay, he is the authority for me. So I have to have his permission, which is like getting the permission from the divine, whereas I have his verbal permission to do this because I have a certain amount of knowledge that I was taught by him. It was designated by him to do this certain right upon the home. And this would be some fumigation of the house. And also, there's other rituals involved with the home. It takes probably about 2 hours to do.
Have you ever found a human and demonic spirit in the same location?
Oh, yes. Yes, it does happen. And the inhuman spirit may pose, what we think, it may pose to the human spirit, if it is in the home, as another human spirit. And it will entice this spirit to interact with the humans that are living in the home. Now, we may have something that's in the background, where it may not show its presence at first. But that's why we bring in someone to discern. Now, when we bring someone into the home to discern, they may pick up on that human spirit. We don't tell them anything that's going on in the home. They may come back down and say, well, there is another presence in this home. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong here. And we go from there. And I may use what we call religious provocation. And this is something where I'm using an adjuration, whereas I am provoking it in the name of Jesus Christ to show itself. Because I am not a psychic. I am not someone who's able to discern. So I have to see it to be able to bring the evidence to the church to get whatever needs to be done. Because sometimes when I will go into a home, it may not work proper. We can go into a home, I can do a clearing of a home. So it does work most of the time, 90% of the time, but sometimes it won't. I have to bring in a person of the cloth because there may be something in that home that's just so strong in that home that I need something more. So we have to have that evidence to be able to break through the church, to have that either a mass said or an exorcism in the home. Whatever you do, if you do feel that there's something in your home and you feel it is something of a negative nature, do not. Now, if you're going to have a priest bless your house, no matter if it's Catholic or any type of denomination, don't have the house blessed right away. Call on someone like myself or call on the church first, because it's just like religious provocation. He would not be throwing it out. He would not be alleviating the home of the presence. He's just doing a blessing on the home, and it would just irritate the spirit. So you'll have more of a reaction. So you want to hold off on that. It's a very good thing to get your house blessed, no matter what denomination or what belief that you are. But you want to make sure that you have the house clear first, then have a blessing on the house. But don't make that mistake. We've had people who've done that before, or don't use sage either. You know, sage is a good thing. I mean, it smells nice, but it just irritates these spirits.
Well, I don't know. I think some spirits need to be irritated. I read in your bio that you studied under Ed and Lorraine Warren. My wife and I, prior to moving to Las Vegas, we had been to a few of their lectures. We found them to be very astute people. We enjoyed them very much. What brought you to studying under them?
Well, I was very young. I had an experience when I was younger, and I was intrigued by the subject. And my family was very devout Catholic, and I just wanted to know. I knew about the divine, so I wanted to know about the other side also. I had read in a newspaper article, and I think it was maybe 14, 15 years old, and I had read in a newspaper article that they were going to be appearing at Lyman Hall. And I had gone to Lyman Hall, and after the lecture, which was an awesome lecture, Ed always put on a spectacular show. After the show, I had approached Ed. I was 14, 15 years old. I said, I'd like to do what you do. And he kind of looked down at me and kind of chuckled. And he said, well, why don't you come back in a few years? And I did. And fortunately for me, Ed and Lorraine were beautiful people and very willing to help out anybody. And Ed took me under his wing, and he taught me how to be a religious demonologist.
If a spirit appears to someone, say, for example, in their bedroom at night, is it safe for them to try to communicate with it?
No. No, it's not. Like I said before, I would try to either get a hold of someone in the church or try to get a hold of someone who is able to deal with these things and has some type of knowledge about these things. I would not make contact because that's recognition. Now, it could be a human spirit. You may live in a home that maybe has some history to it. It could appear as a small young girl, but it may not be a small young girl. And I don't mean to scare everyone in the land here, but it just may not be what it appears to be. And your recognition, where you're giving verbal recognition to this thing, trying to make contact, or you're giving a place for residence of this thing, where you, let's use an example, a little girl, maybe put some toys aside where you want it to play with these toys, it may act like a human spirit for a while. But then when the scratches come and the attacks come, you may have a different tune. You may show a different tune, because the thing is that
at first it may appear as a human, but then it's going to show its true face. So just be very careful. Get a hold of someone who knows about the subject matter.
I know that Ed and Lorraine were very, very adamant against the Ouija board. Don't have them anywhere around. And I noticed that you not only hold it to Ouija board, but you also mentioned seances and tarot cards, that they're as dangerous as the Ouija board. Why do demonologists claim that these things are as bad as they are?
Well, it's not, like I said before, the items, it's not the item itself. It's that connection that you want to make to the other side. The only way I can put it to you is that you have a phone book, you flip through the pages, and you point your finger at them. You just slap your finger down on the first page that you're able to fit your finger into, and you just call that number. You don't know who you're calling. Now, if you don't lead your own life, there's always something that will. Now, you may not have a problem. Some people don't have problems with Ouija boards. I know of someone who's been using it for 40 years, never has had a problem. At least they said that they did. Now, using tarot cards, most people wouldn't kind of put tarot cards with possession. They wouldn't put those two together, classification. But again, you're counting on these cards to give you answers. It's an oracle. All these things are oracles. You're counting on the spiritual to direct your life. Use what God gave you, your own common sense.
I think that God is dealing a little bit short on that these days. Does everyone who uses these... you've answered that. Not everyone has a problem with them. What should an ordinary person look for to tell the difference between a human and a demonic spirit? Suppose I had a spirit come to visit me at my house, and I really wanted to try to open communication. How would I know if I was dealing with a good guy or a bad guy?
Well, sometimes you can have a spirit appear to you as a human, okay? Now, if this spirit appears to you more than once, look for deformities. I have found in my work doing this for about 18 years now that when we do see something appear as a human, where it's not a human, there'll be something wrong with it. There'll be something that's not quite right about it. And also, there's this feeling. When the diabolical does come around, there's a particular feeling that you get. It's a fear that is beyond anything that you could imagine. The room fills with it. It's a feeling of dread. It's a feeling of doom, imminent doom. And you know that there's something wrong here. When you come into the presence of a human spirit, there may be fear there, but it's nothing like the presence of a demonic spirit.
I can vouch for what you said. What protocol do you use when you employ, or what protocol do you employ when you're conducting an investigation?
Well, like I said before, we have different types of counselors and psychiatrists and medical doctors, and also the clergy that works with us. The information that we, from the very beginning, even from the preliminary interviews on the phone with the person, because the person may not be in our own state, they may be in California, and we're on the East Coast. All the information that we have, we try to bring it to others for second and third opinions. The criteria we go by, it depends on the situation. Now, if the person has problems in the home, we'll ask different questions on the phone. Now, this may be where we'll ask, do you have any types of pipes in the house that bang? Do you have any problems with the plumbing? You know, it's just this simple question, you know. Then we'll go into more detailed questions. Have you been involved with this? Have you been involved with that? What types of feelings do you have in the house? But we have a listing of questions that we use, but it's a process. We usually will do the preliminary. If they are long distance, we will do a full interview over the phone. And when we get there, we'll do another interview with them in person. And we'll try to interview each person by themselves. We don't interview people together. Never interview them together.
When you define a situation where you know there is a spirit in the house, how quickly are you able to determine whether it is a human spirit or a demonic spirit?
Well, it depends on if you have that instant feeling of dread or doom, or from what the person's describing to you, because you know, dealing with these things for so long, you just have this. You have a basic outline. If you have a demonic in the house, you're going to get these different smells in the house. If a person describes a rotting meat smell in the house, that feeling of dread in the house, things of that nature, you know, you might be dealing with something else. If a person says that they maybe heard footsteps walking up or down the stairs, it could be a common haunting. It could be a traditional haunting. You know, it depends on what the person tells you, what you feel when you first get there. That's why I'll use people to discern the home. I actually use Barb here for discernment a lot of the time. And she will walk through the home. And we won't tell her anything about the home. But she'll walk through the home and she'll tell us, you know, what she feels. You know, she's able to not see things visually. She's not clairvisual, but she is clairaudient. And she's able to hear different things in the home. And we'll also use other people that we do work with and associate with to bring them in to see what they feel. And we'll use different people at different times to see what they feel, and then we'll culminate all this information. And outside of all the records that we have, like you asked the question before, what is the itinerary? We use all this information. We culminate all this information, write it down on a whole report, and then we go over it with the whole team. I don't just do it myself. It's the whole team. The whole team of Phantasm.
Yeah, I think that's important for the simple reason that there's a lot of people that I've interviewed over the years that it doesn't matter what type of spirit it is, they're terrified. And to them, every spirit is demonic. When a spirit is cast out or exorcised, where does it go? To the neighbor's house?
Yes, it goes to the neighbor's house. No, I'm kidding. It goes back into torment. What we believe is hell. Now, you can personify hell as a place of fire and brimstone, or you can personify it as a place of ultimate torment. They have, meaning the diabolical fallen angels, have detached themselves from God. All that is positive and good in the universe, they have put themselves into darkness. They are alone. They are in their own torment because they have no hope. They go back to that torment, and they remain there until such time when someone fools around with something. Until such time when someone opens themselves up, it creates that fissure, that crack, where they're able to step in, cloven hoof.
Dave, you had mentioned earlier that you had recordings of exorcisms, and I'd like you to take and identify the ones that you have at this point, and give a little bit of an introduction as to what it is, and I'll just let you take it over from here, all right?
Okay, the first one you're going to be hearing was actually recorded in Connecticut. It was a home where the family was involved with candle magic. And the family was involved with candle magic for quite a number of years. The mother was taught by the grandmother, and the mother had taught the daughter. But I guess in teaching the daughter, she did not teach her correctly. But that's what the story goes, what we were told. Because the daughter had conjured something that was quite infernal and quite dark. One of my investigators, we had spent two nights in the home. One of my investigators had left the tape recorder in the downstairs part of the house. Numerous pictures came out of his home that I had showed you. Unfortunately, our radio listeners were not able to see those pictures, but very dark forms actually coming from the ceiling area and flying off to the other side of the room. One of the forms actually coming around one of the occupants of the home. In the magic mirror that I actually showed you, where there's two faces in the mirror. What I'm going to be playing next is a recording that was made in the downstairs area of the home, the actual basement of the home. Now, when you listen to this voice, it's going to be played forwards, obviously. But, and I don't have the reverse for this, but if it is played reverse, it actually says something else. So it says, is this the infidel that lives? That's what I believe it says, or something of that nature. And then when you play it backwards, it seems to say, spread the blood of the innocent. But you be the judge. And that was from the basement area of the home in Connecticut. What we're going to be hearing next is a recording from an exorcism, and this had occurred within the last year. The woman was quite violent during the exorcism, and the case had culminated from basically a phone call that was made to us by this woman. She had heard me on one of the radio shows, and she had called us, got contact with us. And through the interviews, we felt that she did need to have some type of intercession by us and by the clergy. So this is an excerpt from that exorcism. And you'll see that she was quite boisterous and quite vulgar. As you can see, she was quite boisterous. Fortunately for us, it only took one exorcism. This woman is very happy now, and she's had this alleviated from her life. She was involved with prostitution. She was involved with the occult. She had led a life of debauchery. But she wanted to become a religious person. She had turned around in her life. And when she did that, everything that she tried to make her life better seemed to fall flat. So she felt that something interesting. Then she would be woken up in the middle of the night with poking voices. Different things would occur to her. During the interviews, we had found that she knew different things that we were doing. She would tell me what I'm doing and what I did in my day without even me saying anything, nor would I say anything to her. She had knowledge that she shouldn't have had. During the exorcism, she had extreme strength. It took five people to hold her down. She almost broke the chair, like I was talking about earlier in our interview. She actually just about broke the chair. So strong. It's amazing how these different individuals get involved with the diabolical. It's a beautiful thing when you do come in contact with a human spirit and are able to help that human spirit to pass on. But if you're not absolutely sure that that's a human spirit, don't delve into the supernatural in that way, because you may lead yourself down a primrose path, and in that primrose path you might get lost. Beware of the dark.
Are there, do people charge for going to the homes and helping these people rid themselves of unfriendly spirits?
No, we don't really charge family per se. One thing that your listeners want to be aware of, though, is if they call in some other groups, they come in, they do their, shall we say, act and say, $600, please. They're definitely not doing it to help you. They're doing it to to promote themselves, to make money for themselves. Many of, like ourselves, all that we ask for is that, for a donation, just to cover our expenses. None of us, again, earn this to really make any money or anything like that. Just to cover our expenses for materials and equipment. That's about it. And transportation.
Dave, we were talking earlier about demonic spirits attacking you or your team members. Can you give me a description of one that either you or one of your teammates has experienced?
One does come to mind. We were involved with a case in upstate New York. I had run out of holy water. We were in the downstairs part of the house, and Barb had actually went upstairs to acquire more holy water. When she had come back down the stairs to come back down to the basement area, she, as it was described to me, it felt as though she stuck her foot into what felt like mud. But we know that when we have a strong diabolical presence at home, we can't have what we call solidification of the atmosphere. She stuck her foot forward on the first step. It felt as though she stepped into molasses. She was turned around. Now, we're downstairs. We can see this happening. She was turned around. As she's coming down the stairs, she's not touching the stairs, okay? Her body's actually being almost as though a fist had grabbed her by her chest and pushed her down the stairs. And she went down in slow motion without touching the stairs. It's very strange to see. She's fighting the whole way. Her arms are flailing. Her legs are flailing straight out. Her arms are straight out as though she's fighting something. Get away from me. Get away from me is all she screamed. All the way down to the very bottom, and she was pushed right against the wall. She doesn't remember it. She remembers very, very small bits and pieces of the thing happening, but I mean, really, she does not remember a lot of it. We told her later what we experienced, what we saw, but she did not recollect. But it was amazing to see. We were glad she was okay. She only had some minor bumps and bruises, but that's one that comes to mind.
That's an attention getter for sure. What's the worst thing that you've ever encountered in an investigation or exorcism?
Well, during an exorcism, it's the physical contact with the person. As a matter of fact, the exorcism that you're going to play or have played, I'm not sure when you're going to be playing that, but that exorcism, I suffered a broken rib from that exorcism, trying to hold that chair from busting. The woman was so strong, like I said, there was four or five people around her trying to hold her down. It took me a few weeks to recover from that. I guess the worst of the worst is when you're by yourself in a particular area of a house and a presence comes upon you. Now, when this presence comes upon you, it knows you're alone. That feeling of being alone, even though you're not being physically attacked, even though that you're not being, there's no real intercession there. You just know that you're alone with this presence. And I have to say, that's the most terrifying thing, that being alone, that feeling of aloneness. It's that singular type of feeling where you know there's no one else around to help you. But most of all, I have to say the most terrifying thing working with this field has to be when you're followed back home. And it has happened on quite a few occasions. I told you about the encounter that I had when coming out of that other case. But it's something where this thing appears in your house and you know it's there to stop you from working with that family. It does not want you to help that family at all. We've had intercession even during exorcisms. We had a case that we were working in Canada, and we had brought the person back to the United States to be exorcised by Bishop Robert McKenna. Outside in the snow, we saw hoofprints, giant hoofprints in the snow. Cloven hoof. Yeah. Almost as though a cow walking around on two legs. That size. It's amazing. You know, it's not that these things have physical bodies. It just does that to make you know it's there. Because, like I said, it has no physical body, but it would do these things just to terrify you. It knows what scares you. We heard this thing walking on the roof during that exorcism in particular. But, like I said, it knows what frightens you. If you do have an encounter with something, or you do feel like there's something in your home of this nature, where you just have this feeling of dread and doom, and this fear, that's this ultimate fear, get the help. Don't wait, because you don't want it to escalate to a point where it's going to hurt your family, or it's going to hurt you, or intercede your life so much it's going to destroy you. Don't let that happen.
Can anyone be a religious demonologist? And let me explain what I mean by that. Can a person simply go and read a few books about spirits and declare themselves to be qualified? Or is there a heck of a lot more to it?
Oh, there's a lot more to it.
Dave, let me ask you this. Can anyone be a religious demonologist? And let me explain what I mean by that. Can a person simply read a few books about spirits and declare themselves qualified? Or is there a heck of a lot more to it?
First of all, to be a religious demonologist, which I'm a lay religious demonologist because I'm not a person of the cloth, but to be a religious demonologist, in any sense of the word, you have to be trained by a religious demonologist. I was trained by Ed Warren. Now, there was a lot of book learning, you know, involved with it. There's also a lot of field work. There's a lot of preparation over many, many, many years. And like I said, you have to be trained by a religious demonologist to be one. There are what we call armchair religious demonologists who read a lot of books about the subject matter. Then they get involved with the subject, or they have radio shows or TV shows that they go on and they say that they're a religious demonologist. They can get somebody into a lot of trouble. You know, if you want to be a psychic researcher, take pictures and go into a house and try to maybe discern something, feel that you're psychic or whatnot, that's fine. But if you're involved with someone that they're at their last leg and they're at the point where they're ready to give up, you have that person's life in your hands. You better know what you're doing. Like I said, there's a lot of book learning, there's a lot of field work, there's a lot of preparation, and you have to be trained by one, and you have to have authority. The Catholic Church is the only one that has religious demonology. Now, with that, the only thing I can say is just be very careful. If you have the ability to be able to learn, there are other religious demonologists out there besides myself. Not very many of them, but make sure that they have credentials. I have credentials myself from the Roman Catholic Church. But like I said, just make sure they're a person that's really what they say they are.
You had mentioned before about the pictures of that demon in the house where the exorcism took place. If you have those on JPEG format, we can certainly put them on the website so that people can see them.
The pictures, I'm not sure. I would have to see if I could email them to you. I have, like I had said to you, my printer didn't print them out very well. I printed them very quickly so I could show you today. I would have to see, so that people could see them. But basically what they're looking at, if they saw the pictures, what we saw that day was a black form that came from the ceiling. We were on the first floor of the house. This form was black and black. The only way I could describe it to you is that these things, when they appear, if they do appear in this form, it's like a black curtain with tendrils that comes from it. And it's another thing that I have to explain. Like I said before, they have really no true form. It's what they appear as to cause fear in you. Because that fear, they actually are able to attain energy. They're able to attain that influence upon you. They're able to intercede upon you through that fear. It's like an animal. You know, think of it as a predator. When an animal knows you're afraid, it's able to intercede upon you. That fear works against you. It's just like a predator. Picture it as the wolf. You know, it just wants to encircle you until you're weak enough for it to attack. That's basically how it works.
Well, Dave, I really appreciate it. Let me ask you a question. If a person believes a nasty spirit, that's a nice name for a demon, is responsible for making their lives miserable, and they'd like your help, how can they get a hold of you, and what would they do?
Well, basically, what they can do, they can go to our website. Our website is www.phantasmpsi.com. And that's all together, one word, Phantasm Psi Research. When they go to the website, they can find our email, which they can send us an email letter. Or they can email us directly at bheid@sbcglobal.net, or they can write us by snail mail, which would be P.O. Box 823 North Brantford, Connecticut, zip code 06471.
Okay, terrific. Dave, I really appreciate your time. This has been enlightening, to say the least, and we'd like to keep the door open, and as you move down the road and you have other investigations, we'd like to stay in touch with you and find out about them and let the public know about them. How's that?
I had a great time doing this interview. Your show is, I'd gone to your website, and it seems that your website is vastly eclectic, I have to say. It covers many, many regions and many zones. And I hear, as you've told me, you are pretty much interested in the paranormal yourself. And been involved with it for many, many years. So I think that we can have some interesting conversations in the future. But good luck in your endeavors also.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate that. John, do you have any parting comments?
None really, other than for anybody that's having problems in their homes, get a hold of us and we'll do our best to help you.
Terrific. Well, this is Rod C. Davis and the Demonologist crew bidding everybody adieu from Brantford, Connecticut. Have a good evening.